This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so excited you're joining us today. We have a really interesting, intriguing show. You know, we do a lot of shows talking about our wonderful dogs and our cats, and occasionally there's some birds that pop in there. But now we're going to talk about some elephants and a sanctuary and all the other critters that are being rescued. So it's going to be a fun, and exciting show. We've got author Françoise Malby-Anthony coming on talking about her latest book, The Elephants of Tula Tula. So we're super duper excited about the interview today. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
How many of you have pets? My hand's raised. Now think about how lucky you are to have such a sweet little pet in your life, and that pet is lucky to have you too. But unfortunately, there are countless pets out there that don't have a home to call their own. However, Bob's from Skechers is trying to change that. So we developed Bob's for Dogs and Cats to help pets in need. With every purchase of adorable Bob's footwear or fun, stylish apparel, or even the cutest Bob's pet accessories, Skechers makes a donation to Petco Love to help save shelter pets. And with your help, we've already saved the lives of over 1 million pets and raised over $7 million. So while you're getting style and comfort with features like Skechers' famous memory foam cushioning, you're also helping to save an adorable pet in need and helping another lucky owner be connected with a future best friend and companion. Because happiness is having a loving pet by your side. Find Bob's at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, select Petco locations, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining us today is author of the international best-selling book, An Elephant in My Kitchen. And her latest book is The Elephants of Tula Tula. Welcome to the show, Françoise Malby-Anthony.
Hello, Tim. Thanks so much for having me.
We're excited. Well, we're super duper excited, and you're coming to us all the way from South Africa.
Yes, from South Africa, Zululand. Exactly.
Absolutely. Now, a lot of people probably already know the fabulous work that you're doing, and obviously your best-selling book, An Elephant in My Kitchen. But I want to talk about the latest book, which is called The Elephants of Tula Tula. Tell us a little bit about the book and how it came about, and also talk to us a little bit about all the wonderful work you're doing there.
Okay, so my first book was because, there's always a main inspiration for a book. It was a baby elephant in my kitchen, which landed in my kitchen. And that was, almost 10 years ago. Now she's a big girl. She's 9 years old. She wouldn't fit into my kitchen. And my second book, Elephants of Tula Tula, because I had an elephant in my garden. Originally, I wanted to call it An Elephant in My Garden. It was a matriarch who came into my garden, and it's quite an amazing event, you know, when you've got a 4-ton elephant landing in your garden. And when it's a book, it starts like there was a story of Frankie, our matriarch. And then it's a book as well, which is mainly to, just like the previous one, to bring awareness of all the work and all the challenges that face conservation. Because I think a lot of people come on safari. They land in those beautiful lodges and do game drives. And I think people need to know what's actually happening behind the scene. And all the difficulties we go through to care for the animals. Because this is our passion, of course. This is caring for the animals, rescuing animals, and keeping them free roaming into a game reserve like ours. And the most important thing for elephants, you know, they are big animals and they need a lot of space. And our main project that we like to expand the land for our elephant habitat, because the problem of wildlife is the land shrinkage. There's less and less land for conservation. And this is what we're fighting for, to create more land for our wildlife in general, because we don't do any hunting, of course, at Tula Tula. We don't do any culling or hunting. So animals just reproduce themselves, and then so they need more land. This is what we do at Tula Tula. It's one of the projects that we do, of course. And then, but we got other animals as well. We got rhinos, we got giraffe, we got, and to bring awareness as well of the number of wildlife of endangered species, numbers which are growing every day. So I'm sure that a lot of people don't know that giraffes are on the endangered species, endangered list as well. Elephants are, rhinos, of course, a lot of people know that as well. But there are so many animals, and what we do at Tula is to care for them and make sure they don't get killed by poachers. I mean, we've got a very strong anti-poaching unit, and we've got a dog, actually, a working dog called Ashley, who is one of those dogs that anti-poaching unit takes on patrolling every single day. And an amazing dog is a German Shepherd, absolutely magnificent. And voila, this is what we do in a nutshell.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. You know, it sort of brings a smile to my face, because so when you say an elephant shows up in your garden, okay, so in the United States, a garden is a vegetable or a flower garden, you know, a little bed or you know, some landscaping put around your area, your house, what have you. And I know in Europe, UK, et cetera, that a garden is often your yard, the backyard, the land that you're on. Now, how is that different? And I'm trying to, you know, it's funny when I first visualized that based on what you said, it's like, I couldn't imagine an elephant even fitting in my backyard, let alone in my garden.
But you know what's amazing, that they've got 4,500 hectares to roam free and to eat and to have fun. No, she had to choose my garden. And what's amazing is that there are electric wires to stop the wildlife from coming into my little garden. And there are electric wires on the ground. And they are about four. And you know, an elephant that got big feet. Huh? But you know what's most interesting? That shows the intelligence of these incredible animals. She just went in between those wires to get into my garden. Then when I saw, she was right next to my window, and I actually have a big fright, because I've got lots of dogs as well. I've got seven dogs. And they were all going crazy, because seeing an elephant in there, because that's their territory, they went a bit crazy. But that elephant succeeded, because another elephant tried to get into my garden, her son, called Brandon, and he got shocked. I mean, it's almost 10,000 volts, so that makes your hair very straight, you see. So 10,000 volts, and he got shocked. And all the herd were behind that electric wires. And Frankie was just like defiantly looking at me. And and I thought, oh my gosh, she's going to stay here, because she's not going to be able to get out. I thought, because if she gets shocked, then she's going to be in a bad mood. And, you know, she's a little bit temperamental as well, that matriarch. So anyway, she went out, putting one foot after the other. And the other elephants were there, pointing their trunks to the electric wire, like telling and trumpeting and telling her, oh, be careful, Frankie, you're going to be incredible. She did that with an acrobatic elegance, going one foot, another foot, and she came out, and then she turned towards me, looking at me to see, and who is the boss now? This kind of thing. Incredible. That was an amazing, but you know, the thing that she was trying to tell me something. There was something very unusual in that behavior for an elephant. They respect the rules. Elephants are intelligent. They discipline. Their children are disciplined. They are. They got a huge respect as well for us. And she always came to visit me on the behind the electric wire. And this time she decided to come and see me. There was something like, I don't know, she was trying to tell me something. But a few months later, if you read the book, for the readers, they'll understand what. That there was something happening in her life. And maybe she was trying to get closer to me or something like that. But, you know, elephants, there's always something, a message. Animals communicate with humans a certain way. And the way you interpret animals' behavior or animals' communication is from a very personal viewpoint. And with Frankie, I had a very special relationship. And my nickname is Frankie as well. So she was named after me. And I'm not going to tell the whole story of the book, of course, what happened to Frankie after that, of course, and which is a little bit of a sad story. It's part of the emotional roller coaster of the book, you know, the beautiful story and then the sad story, and got a bit of, that's life in the bush, life in a game reserve. It's not always all fun and and beautiful. But anyway, so voila. So that was the story of my elephant in my garden. She ate all my flowers. Sorry, I forgot to say. She ate all my flowers. I had beautiful flowers. She ate them all.
She ate all the flowers and she delicately moved away from harm's way from the wiring and then just turned to you and said, hey, look, look who's the boss now. If we ever had any doubt to begin with. But I love how you know, I know you've been doing this a long time. The Tula Tula Game Reserve has been around, what, since 1998?
That's right.
I know you've been working with the animals for quite some time, but I love how you phrase that and your connection. So I want to expand on that a little bit, because obviously I can imagine you know a lot about the animals, all types of animals, by watching them and their activities and the things they do and how they respond, the ear response, the tail flip, the various things that animals do. But you're talking about a deeper connection that you have and being able to really listen and know that Frankie was trying to tell you a little bit more than, hey, I'm going to eat all your flowers.
Yeah, no, exactly. She was trying to tell me something. And at the beginning, well, it was a moment of panic, of course. And then I must say that I had a very special relationship with that elephant. She used to come and see me often. She used to bring the herd to see me. Above all, after my late husband passed away, Lawrence Anthony passed away in 2012. And you know that amazing story of the elephants who came 2 days after we found out that he passed away, because he passed away in Johannesburg, which is 600 kilometers from Tula Tula. And that amazing story, which is that the elephants all came to the house and like in a procession, like to pay their respect, like they knew something happened. They knew, because the announcement of the death of my late husband was like if a bomb had exploded on Tula Tula. Everybody was, they could feel the immense emotion. The emotion of everybody at Tula Tula. Everybody was crying. Everybody was desperate. Everybody was in a terrible state, like if life had stopped completely at Tula Tula. And those elephants came and they stood around for a long time in front of my house, behind the electric wire. And they were there. But the most amazing thing is that the following year, exactly the same day, the same time, they all came back exactly the same procession. Isn't that amazing? But it's even more amazing that the following year, exactly the same thing happened. They all came back as a procession, 5 o'clock, same day, and exactly the same procession. So, you know, people try to explain something like that. You don't. You cannot explain it. Is it a coincidence? Knowing those elephants, knowing the relationship they had with my late husband, it's perfectly understandable. I mean, this is quite an extraordinary story. And on the 4th of March, I promise you, they're never far away from the house. Even they don't come straight to the house anymore, because now, well, there's been a change as well amongst the matriarch. There's a new matriarch now. So it's different, but they are never far away that day. So it's quite an extraordinary event. I mean, we've got so many examples in the books of the amazing connection that those elephants have got with us, the humans. Absolutely extraordinary. Unique.
To me, when you tell that story, I mean, that's incredible. It's an incredible story and a true tribute. But it also goes to the deep understanding. You know, all animals have that connection. They have that heart connection. They have that understanding with us. And in particular with the elephants, you know, my knowledge of them is they are even more in tune with what is going on around them, going on with their pack and or with their group. And if there is a death within the group, then the mourning period and making sure the next in line is taking care of things. And it sounds like when your husband made his transition, that was a natural thing for them to do, to come in and honor him, honor, you know, being part of their lives and being part of their group.
Absolutely. But you know, those elephants were there coming back to see me as well after the death of Lawrence, but they came back often, you know. And, you know, I understood, because a lot of people thought I was going to leave Tula Tula, I was going to leave South Africa and go back to France, but I never thought about that for 1 second. But, you know, I think at the same time, they gave me a sense of direction. They gave me a purpose. You know, they always say that passion is a secret to persistence. And it's true that they made me realize how fragile they were in a way, and how much the trust that they had put into humans, into us, because, you know, when they arrived at the beginning, those elephants were not like that at all. They were a bunch of really very rogue elephants. They were very wild and very unhappy. They had been moved from another game reserve because they were going to be put down. And when we rescued them with Lawrence, I mean, those elephants were trouble elephants, really problem elephants. They wanted to escape. We had to save their life. I mean, we had to spend time with them. So, you know, to make them gain trust in humans took a long time. They almost killed us once with Lawrence. We were on a four-wheeler motorbike. I mean, all these things we remember from those days. And if you look at them now, Tim, I mean, they are the most incredible, unique herd of elephants. And people who are scared of elephants, they come to us, I promise you, the day they leave, they're not scared of elephants anymore. But our elephants are unique in their behavior. You know, when people do the safari on the game drive vehicle, you know, on those safari vehicles, the elephants, they see a new group of guests arrive and they just come and see them. I tell the guests, you think you're going to see the elephants? No, no, no. Elephants are going to come, and they come close to the guests. They come and sniff them. And these are wild elephants. Huh? These are not circus or zoo elephants. They are wild. And which means you mustn't touch them. You mustn't. They come next to you. And people just go into such an emotional state because that doesn't happen anywhere else. And they just come and check, and are you new, and blah, blah, blah. And people are, you know, it's unique, absolutely unique. Now, the trust they've got in humans is just incredible compared to 23 years ago, I don't know, 1998, 23, 24 years ago when they arrived. Oh, my God, you could not approach them. They were they were really wild and rogue, and we're trying to stay away from them. Now they are just, because the matriarch installed that communication to the rest of the herd, saying we saved them. They know we saved them. It's like a dog that you get from the shelter. He knows that you saved him or her. They know that. That's why they are appreciative. They are grateful. They show it. Voilà. This, in comparison, if I can use that, because all my dogs come from shelters. They're all abandoned dogs, and you can see the appreciation in animals when they get rescued. They know that the humans mean good to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They understand. And I think we continue to learn more and more about the animals every single day, of all types, wild animals, as well as domesticated animals. If we just slow down, stop and listen and be part of their world. And that sounds like what you do in this case and every single day.
It's simple as that. It's exactly that. You know, we even had, that was in my previous book, but that amazing story of that mother elephant. She pushed her baby. He was 7 days old. She pushed her baby towards the game drive vehicle, the vehicle where they were guests. There was a ranger in the vehicle. She pushed him because he had a snare around his face. As you know, a snare, that's what the poachers put to catch smaller animals. And that little baby had put his head in the wrong place and he couldn't eat. He would have died of starvation. And that mother elephant pushed it, knowing that the ranger would make the right call and we would call the vet and he would be saved. And what is amazing, and we talk about appreciation and gratefulness, those elephants that evening, because I invited everyone at the lodge, the veterinarians, the ranchers, to thank them because it was a real cowboy mission, you know, with the helicopter, the vet, to get that thing around the face of that baby elephant who, anyway, the whole herd, I've invited all the humans at the lodge for a drink. And guess who was at the entrance of the lodge? The whole herd of elephants.
Wow.
And, you know, usually because, you know, elephants don't like helicopter, it means capture. It means a lot of things for them. And that evening, so normally a normal herd of elephants, they would have escaped and they would have, no, I mean, they would have gone into the forest, you know, because we've got a lot of diversity of landscape at Tulatula. And they would have gone very far away not to see humans again. And on the contrary, they all came and to do what? To say thank you. That's for sure.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. All right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we'll come back and continue our conversation with Françoise Mauby-Anthony and her book, The Elephants of Tula Tula. I want to talk to her a little bit about her writing styles and how the book came about. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author, international bestseller, Françoise Mauby-Anthony, and her latest book, The Elephants of Tula Tula. Now, I have to say, the book and the story is fantastic. It's educational. It's heartfelt. It is heart-wrenching. It has a little bit of everything in there. It has wonderful color photos in here of not only the elephants that are discussed, but also we've got vultures in there. We've got water buffalo. We've got cheetahs. It's just a fabulous book. So everybody's going to be entertained by the stories, but also the beautiful photos of the various animals, the giraffes, etc. Tell us a little bit about putting together this book. Did you find it harder or easier compared maybe to the first book? How did you decide what the storyline would be and then what to include to keep everything tied together and everybody engaged?
Well, the story in itself is quite riveting because it's never a dull moment kind of stories. But what I wanted above all to make it educational and inspirational. I think that a lot of young people should be reading this book because, you know, I always have the hope to develop passion. I think a lot of young people should develop passion for the love of nature and the love of wildlife and the love of conservation. You know, nature, wildlife, all this is disappearing. And I think what really makes me happy when I've got some young people, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, they write to me and they tell me that my books inspire them to get into conservation and to raise funds. So some draw, some do some drawings from my photos, just spread the world, spread awareness of what's happening to the African wildlife, because it's very sad what's happening. When you know that an elephant is killed every 15 minutes in Africa, that three rhinos are killed every day in South Africa, and that there are only 7,000 cheetahs left in the world, that vultures are a seriously endangered species because most of the time because of traditions, ancient beliefs, and which don't mean anything anymore. I mean, we don't mean anything. You know, those animals are being murdered. And mm-hmm. I think because of ivory, because of a horn, which is just keratin, which is the same as your nails and your hair. I think it's just to bring awareness and to inspire passion about wildlife and help because in 20 years time, if it carries on like that, there won't be any more in Africa. If you work it out, how many rhinos there are left in Africa and at what speed they get poached by very organized crime that we fight every day. You know, my rhinos are followed 24 hours a day by my anti-poaching unit. You know, the cost of things like that. I mean, you know, the protection that we have to... It's one of our biggest expenses, actually, is anti-poaching and the protection of our wildlife, because there are people with no heart. I must say that poverty is one of the reasons as well that some people do poaching. But, you know, our reason to carry on is to protect those animals, all of them, because they're all endangered. They're all on the endangered list. And if you think with a bit of vision, 20 years' time, 25 years, what's going to be left if people don't help and don't do something about it?
Absolutely. And people can do things at the smallest level. You know, they can get involved heavily into it, or even the smallest things will, the awareness and getting the message out and getting in front of the right people to help with the cause. I would imagine it doesn't have to be a grandiose gesture. It could be the smallest things just to educate yourself and get involved.
That's it. And fall in love with the animals. I think this is the purpose of my book as well. People must fall in love because, you know, if you think about it, all my elephants, I've got names. My hippos, I've got names. So Romeo and Juliet, my rhinos all got names as well. And, you know, it makes them humans, almost humans. When you look at the story of my rhinos and the love triangle, and it's like a soap opera. And, you know, it belongs, and my elephants as well, when you see them interacting, they're just so much like humans. And like I think someone said, they're so much like humans, just a little bit better. So it's just
exactly.
To learn to become more like animals. Voila.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. If live an elephant's life, I think we'd be much better society. That's for sure.
They should run the planet. They should run.
I agree. I vote for that. Let's get it done. Well, the book does a fabulous job of that. Like I said, it's very entertaining. It's very educational, and it has all the elements of a fantastic book. And I want everyone to pick up a copy of The Elephants of Tula Tula. Read through it, get involved, get the message out, support the cause, enjoy the book thoroughly, and enjoy the photos as well. It's just brilliantly put together. So congratulations on the success in this.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Where can people find out more about you and the reserve, and how can they get involved?
We've got a good website. I mean, we're just busy redoing the website. The new one will be out next week. But in the meantime, there's the present website. You've got a whole page about our conservation work. And it's very simple. It's tulatula.com. T-H-U-L-A-T-H-U-L-A.com. In one word, Tula Tula. And so they can have a look to the work we do in conservation for land expansion and rhino protection or wildlife protection in general. We've got a volunteers academy as well, which is extremely popular, which is actually a very affordable way as well to come and help with conservation. So they can find all this on our website. What else have we got? We've got a whole program of adoption. We created that during COVID, actually, to survive, because, you know, during COVID, it was a very tough times, because a game reserve is not a place that you can just lock up and go. You've got to keep protect the animals. The bills keep coming in. So I started that adoption program of elephants, of rhinos. I even put my giraffe, hippos, even my dogs, and even my game rangers. I put all that for adoption. But now we just kept a rhino and the elephants. You got all their names, a little bit of their story. So people adopting an elephant or a rhino, they receive a certificate of adoption with a whole story about this animal, where it comes from, how old he was when we got him, and so on. And these are ways to help as well. And you've got a photo of each one of our elephants and rhinos, and the one that you like the stories the most is the one that people can adopt.
Very good. All right. Well, everybody visit the site, tulatula.com. We'll post that on our site as well. And obviously, everybody, the book's available worldwide. So everybody pick up a copy of The Elephants of Tula Tula by Françoise Malby Anthony. It was such a pleasure talking to you today. I applaud you for everything you're doing, and you've been doing it for so long. We're going to do our best to get the message out and support you. And big kudos once again on another fabulous book.
Thank you so much, Tim. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Very good. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you want to find out more about our great entertainment and our all other wonderful shows, or if you want to drop me a line, you can do so by visiting PetLifeRadio.com. And we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And you can listen to all the wonderful shows while you're there. It's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.